Welcome to the anime podcast. This week we are moored just off Wuhan, where we are looking to find the source of the coronavirus. We believe it's Jeffrey Epstein's
Jeffrey Epstein's alive body on a jet. Okay, please.
Much like the Swiss Army man, his farts are may well be causing a worldwide catastrophe. But while we look for his corpse, we will be discussing the Irish election. The results have been announced last night. The last results were called last night. And so me and Oisin.
Yeah, that's me.
We'll be discussing that. So hopefully enjoy. So in this section, we're going to be discussing the election that's just happened, the campaign over the last 6 weeks, and the results, which have just been announced yesterday, which would have been the 10th, is it? Mm-hmm. 10th of February?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the best way to begin is by giving, I suppose, a bit of background for people who don't know much about Ireland, Irish elections. For those of you who do know about this, you can just skip ahead. But for those who don't, Ireland has...
We're going to be dropping in some gold nuggets in this section, though, so don't skip ahead, please.
Yeah, don't do that. All the porno bits.
We don't maybe. Get paid unless people listen to the full thing.
We don't get paid. We don't get paid at all. So, broadly speaking, Ireland, when it became an independent state in 1922, up until basically about the 1970s, was a effectively a two-party state. You might say actually a party and a half state. Mm. One was Fianna Fáil, which broke off from, as everyone else did, from Sinn Féin and the IRA in the 1920s. Was still very linked to the IRA into the 1930s.
I would say up until the 1970s when Charles Haughey was caught gun running.
Say that too. and is also accurate. Or indeed that the former IRA member, Liam, Sean Lamass, was Taoiseach until 1966. But broadly speaking, was a party and a half or two party state, where coalitions happened. Fianna Fáil, until the '70s, really kind of tried to avoid them. After the '70s, it came inevitable. They had a junior partner. Usually, what would happen is the junior partners would be very badly punished after the term in office was up, and mm-hmm. all sorts of little parties, from the Catholic Party to the Centre Party
PDs,
to the Farmers Party to the Progressive Democrats,
Labour
to the Labour Party to the Green Party, over the 100 years have suffered because of that and disappeared, oftentimes or almost disappeared afterwards. About 40 years ago, it began to change. These days, as it is, the two parties have gone from 85% of the vote to 44% of the vote as of this last election. That's been a consistent thing for 40 years now. So the common sense of the establishment was that it'll be Fianna Fáil, probably, after time in government, and that Fine Gael would do a supply and confidence agreement with them. That was the general consensus. That's kind of generally how Ireland worked. And the belief was that that's kind of how things are going to go on.
And there's a lot of resistance to the idea that, like, Irish people were capable of change, you know, because we were like, oh, well, you know, this is all we've known in freedom. Like, I mean, you know, before we had the British, and those are awful bastards. Now we've got these guys and they're bastards as well, but we're stuck with them, so.
Mm, effectively. And if people didn't like it, they left the country and they went to other places, which often happened. Anyway, without going too much into the history of the state, that's broadly how things were. And so when Leo Varadkar called the election in early January, the general belief was, his part, obviously, he thought that his work and the party's work on Brexit was enough, along with the economy still being decent, to get them past the post. That basically they thought, worst case scenario, well, we'll have to go back into supply and confidence with Fianna Fáil. That's probably their thought process. Fianna Fáil, from what I know, and Oisin can correct me on this, were likely to vote against Simon Harris in a, what are they called?
No confidence vote.
Yes, that was it.
In Simon Harris.
And so before that could happen, he called the election in the hopes that he could avoid that bad thing happening, which would have caused an election anyway, and open it on his terms. Mm. Now, The strange thing that he did is he decided to do that in February, which is very strange because the weather's shit. And it's not the best idea to send people to the polls when the weather's shit.
And to have it on a Saturday as well.
Is very odd.
Yeah.
As well.
It's the first time since 1918.
It is. And again, had a similar result in 1918. And he thought, I don't know, maybe he thought that mothers and fathers would be free on Saturday. They don't have to get childcare. They could just, in their day, wander around the corner to vote. And that younger people who might be home from university could vote. Again, maybe that's not what he wanted, but maybe that's what happened in the end. And that was the run-up to how it began. Now, I probably should ask Oisin this, because we can do this in turns. What did you think was going to happen before, with the campaign and with the results before it even happened?
Obviously, as a tall insider, I have been looking at how out of touch Fine Gael were on a lot of stuff. They thought that they would squeak by on the good performance of Simon Coveney in Brexit, and also the decent size of the economy. But the problem is that when normal people look at their bank accounts, they don't see the size of the economy staring out back at them. They see, very expensive rental crisis underway, a healthcare crisis, and a housing supply and demand. So it was a really ill-advised move. But I don't think that's unusual by any stretch. I think the unusual thing was the results, but any party that's been in power for two terms is out of touch with the electorate. I mean, that's been the case, since time immemorial. So,
but what did you think what did you think was actually going to happen before
with the
campaign and with the actual results?
I actually thought that the Green Party, now I'm obviously from Dublin, so I thought the Green Party would do incredibly well in Dublin and probably struggle down the country, that Labour would be demolished, being replaced by the Social Democrats, and that it would be a Fianna Fáil led government. I mean, that was everyone's pretty much.
So you thought it'd be Fianna Fáil and the Greens, basically.
Yeah, with maybe a few independents as well.
I thought that despite all the palpable problems of living in Dublin, €2,000 average rent a month, public transport, terrible public transport, ridiculous traffic, just in general, huge amount of problems in the city in terms of homelessness, drug addiction, just general people being unpleasant because things are unpleasant, tends to be the case. I thought that people were going to vote Fianna Fáil, obviously, and that there would be a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael supply and confidence just switched around. Now, that was my belief, as we will learn, as we keep talking. That's not been the case.
We don't actually know yet because the government hasn't been like.
True, that's a good point. But certainly, my belief was that you were going to have, roughly speaking, the results of the last election, which was that the parties were roughly the same amount. I think they were 24-25%, weren't they? Yeah. And they had enough seats between the two of them. Well, no, actually, Fine Gael had enough seats with Supply and Confidence, as well as the Independence Alliance. To actually govern. And I thought that was likely to just be reversed with Fianna Fáil taking their role. The problem with Fine Gael, even if you're just looking at this from a, not from an anarchist or socialist perspective, is they have been in power for 9 years. Now, for five years of that, they're in power with the Labour Party, which is effectively, the junior wing of the Fine Gael. For people who are not Irish and maybe listen to this, Labour Party does not denote, the name Labour Party does not denote socialism or social democracy. If anything...
Or even caring about workers.
Or even caring about that, no. it's been a long, long time since the Labour Party has meant that. And it's a great tragedy. The Labour Party in 2011 got 19.5% of the vote. They had, I think, 32 seats.
Mm.
They could have, should have stayed in opposition. And this was at the time when is Eamon Gilmore, is his name? Yeah. Eamon Gilmore was a leader who was a former member of the Left Democracy and former member of the Workers' Party.
SIP2
as well. This was not some random person who was a careerist politician. He got started in the left. I even, as many people do, know his son, who's certainly no fan of Eamon Gilmore's kind of style of politics. But you
as
know,
a father nor as a politician.
So, you know, I've met people who've said, you know, why are younger people, and by younger people I mean anyone under 50, attracted to Sinn Féin? And I'd say to them, and I'd say to everybody, this is a long time coming. Labour Party betrayed its base, and has multiple times. People have just woken up to that fact now. And there's no point. And the last election was the same. Now, well, we'll get to this later on, but thankfully the bête noire of the Irish left, Joan Burton, has been removed from our site, which is always nice. So this was coming for a while, and a lot of these things in hindsight you can see, but I think still my point of view was that people were too cynical, as again with Britain and America, people are very nihilistic and cynical at the moment. But I was, as we will learn, proven wrong. Do you have anything to say?
I think that what really struck me the most was after my dad came back from voting, he said he'd given Sinn Féin his number one. And my dad was always sort of, he grew up in Charlie Haughey's constituency. Charlie Haughey was a famous Fianna Fáil politician and seen as very much a jobs for the boys kind of candidate. And he said, he came home and he said, no, listen, I've had enough of this. And I think it's a real shock for people when their parents actually say, no, it's not just youthful radicalism or anything. It's also needs to be changed. The status quo needs to be changed, you know. Mm. And that was really, really kind of moving to me. Like, I mean, not moving in the sense that he voted for Sinn Féin, but that he did care enough about future generations to not go for the status quo.
Mm. So the obvious thing to talk about is how dismal a campaign it actually was. Now, it should be said before we continue that many anarchists are abstentionist anarchists. The two of us aren't abstentionist anarchists. We believe use whatever means you have. We're not placing a value judgment on that. If someone wants to not vote, that's up to them. I choose to do it because I've very little options other than that right now, so use what you can. So I preface that saying I'm still a socialist, I'm still an anarchist, but I use things strategically. I take the Chomsky view, which is tiny, tiny differences make sometimes big differences in people's lives. Doesn't mean that's the way to have a society that I approve of. It just means that if people can have houses and it's council houses by voting for Sinn Féin or voting for People for Profit, then I will use those means because why would I want 11,000 people to be homeless and if I can avoid that by just voting? Mm. So, but that does not mean that I think it's the way to solve all problems. It's certainly not the way to solve the climate crisis, because even if Sinn Féin end up being in power, they're going to face enormous pressure not to make the type of changes that is necessary to save us, to be honest with you.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, because I was talking to a senator who said that, you know, I think there might be changes coming down the track, because Sinn Féin have no relationship to the civil service in Ireland, whereas Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael did. Like, their brothers, their sisters, their sons, daughters, all work in the civil service. So they were sort of gently, kind of gloves on and everything. Whereas I think Sinn Féin are going to say, listen, the health man cometh. Okay?
The health man cometh.
No, but the health manifesto is overpriced. There's too much middle management. And we're going to have to get rid of, like,
consultants. It'd be nice to get rid of consultants.
Not just a consultant. Like, consultants are actually providing services. It's more the middle management of the HSE who are providing nothing. They're just there for a job for the boys, you know, sort of collecting a pension. And I think hopefully what I want to see from Sinn Féin is that they stand up to the civil service and say, no, we're not going to.
No one has yet stood up to the civil service.
Yes,
the only person who could do it in Britain was Margaret Thatcher, and And we all know what she was. But back to the campaign before we get on to what they may or may not end up doing, if they get into power. The campaign was kind of dismal from the beginning to end. It was the usual thing, which is Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, where they given preference as a for the main debates, the main two debates. There was a great debate, though, in Galway, in NUI Galway, which was really, really good. People for Profits, Richard Boyd Barrett, presented the left-wing argument. Got, I think, most of the applause was for him. Marilyn MacDonald by Sinn Féin was able to make the obvious and rather cool soundbite that, you know, she can't be lectured about fiscal responsibility by one person who was in the government that crashed the economy. That was Micheál Martin. And by another person who's cost, has the most expensive hospital, I think, in European history.
No, it's in world history.
In world history. World history. So again, which was Leo Varadkar. So again, that was a really good debate. I liked that. That was the Claire Byrne debate. I did not watch the Ivan Yates debate because he's a right-wing tool. And I didn't watch the Miriam O'Callaghan debate because Miriam O'Callaghan's brother is in Fianna Fáil. And I thought that was just ridiculous that they picked her to do that. But of the debates I did watch, I did think that the usual tactics were employed. Sinn Féin are in the IRA, blah, blah, blah. Or Sinn Féin is the IRA, or they apologize for them. Which I thought was the usual thing RTE does and the usual thing that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will do. But I think what was astounding, really, besides that, was that Fine Gael had, that was my phone, that Fine Gael had, was so detached from reality of what most people feel the last 9 years have been like. And it's not surprising if you live in D4, if you have a lot of money, if you and the boys go down to watch rugby and get some hinos, you don't actually think the world's a bad place. And certainly if you're very, very wealthy and a property developer, or you hang around with people like Enda Kenny did from Facebook, the world's fine. You know, it's not a big deal for you. But it was just startling how unhinged from reality they were. Equally, Fianna Fáil, it was startling how surprised they were that they were not doing better. Again, the level of cynicism of the two main parties, again, maybe justified because of how many years people put up with them and didn't really seek an alternative. But it's clearly eventually come back to bite them that they just had no real policies. It was the same as. And when, as the campaign went on, as became clearer and clearer that Sinn Féin went from 19% then to matching Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and then getting higher numbers in them, that something weird was happening with something that, for the first time, I mean, the campaign was odd given how, given those things. Fine Gael was detached from reality, Fianna Fáil was doing the same as they usually do, and for once it didn't work. And so that was the weird thing about the campaign, was that it was like no other I can remember, and certainly no other I've ever read about, other than maybe the 1932 election with Fianna Fáil, which is not ironic, it's coincidental, because Fianna Fáil in early 1930s is eerily similar to the Sinn Féin of today.
I do think there's a few things that are underpinning this election. So the first would be that we in Ireland have a sort of pressure mechanism in our country where if there's a crisis, and it's generally with work, we just send a generation off to emigrate. And what's happened recently is because we've been doing well in the EU, and because, you know, there's been a lot of benefits with jobs and tech and pharmaceuticals and all that, that people aren't actually living abroad anymore. They're actually staying in the country, and they're saying, well, actually, hang on a second. What are you going to do? What are you, the government, going to do for me if I'm staying here? You know, about public transport, healthcare, housing, education, the likes, you know, and I think it was very telling that Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar didn't have an answer for any of those questions when they were raised, because they were raised on the notion that no, it's never a problem because you can just export the youngest generation out, you know. So,
which was a tactic that's been used for 170 years. I'd say more than that, actually. Probably more like almost 200 years now. I mean, it's a quite bizarre fact is that the first time you start having large amount of people leaving for economic reasons out of Ireland was just after the Napoleonic War. That's a long fucking time ago. 1 million people left Ireland between the Napoleonic War and the famine. You have 2.1 million people leaving during the famine years, which are only 7 or 8 years. Then you have another, God, a lot of people, let's just say, leaving before independence. You have another 500,000 leaving just in the 1930s and 20s.
Yeah.
I could go on and on. A lot of people have left. It is the go-to safety valve of Irish politics. The thing that's, and again, and that's a class thing. A lot of the people who ended up in power with land ownership, you know, were kind of a peasant proprietorship, kind of a kulaks, as the Stalinists used to call them, conservative landowning class.
No way.
The tankies are tankies. But no, the point is that was able to maintain control of things as long as we had this agricultural society. We were exporting everything to Britain and they were making the money. That was fine. Working class laborers had to leave. These days, we have huge amounts of immigration. Good thing. Our gene pool is a desperate need of more of some fresh DNA. Maybe not the two specimens who are here, but there's plenty of specimens. I can think of Biffo, for example, who could do with some more foreign genes in his DNA pool. But and also a lot more people have stayed. A lot of people who would have left in the past have stayed. My generation, when the economic crash happened, a lot of us left. I think about 420,000 left, of which a majority, over 300,000, came back. Now, that's because of lots of things like Skype and, you know, social media that's kept people connected. It's not that people didn't have a connection to Ireland in the past. It's just literally it was difficult to communicate and literally to keep in contact. So a lot of that's changed. And so now you have another thing that really both those parties just ignored, which, again, in hindsight, you know, they shouldn't have, was you had a series of referendums and even a presidential election that was about issues of social justice, issues that were left-wing issues. The same-sex
marriage referendum.
Marriage referendum in 2015.
And the abortion.
The abortion referendum in 2018. The presidential election last year, which in essence was a debate by the end between people like Peter Casey. If Bertie Ahern had run, that would have been great. But anyway, by Peter Casey and the godfather of Irish socialism, which is, of course, Mr. Michael G. Higgins. So there was those things were all in the background at a time when the economy, while on GDP level is doing good, is actually a gig economy where a lot of young people are stuck in jobs which they're overeducated for, which at the same time as they're dealing with a rental crisis, which is forcing them 5, 6, 7, 8 people paying an exorbitant amounts. So you have all this activism going on at the time when examples of neoliberal crony capitalism are everywhere. Again, in hindsight, it shouldn't be surprising that that generation, my generation, the generation that are younger than me now, coming up as teenagers and coming up as...
That's me.
So we're basically talking about anyone under the age of 35 or anyone who unfortunately came of age after the economic collapse in 2008. So basically, I think that's a safe bet because I know a lot of people who are 4 or 5 years older than me, they don't have the opinions I do because they got in underneath that net and got into an easy mortgage, an easy job with a pension, blah, blah, blah. So it is a kind of, it's both a class thing and it is a situational thing. So again, in hindsight, you can see all those things coming up and it's surprising no one really paid attention to that. I mean, it's not surprising people like the Irish Times, who have an unbelievable bias towards basically the status quo, didn't notice it. Journalists and pundits, someone did a test on this in America that it's a pundits listening to a pundit is little better than flipping a coin. They don't really have a clue what they're talking about. No one can really say it has the type of foresight that's necessary to figure these things out.
Well, they do say that pundits are generally economically conservative and socially liberal, which is
the Irish Times,
which is the Irish Times effectively, but also. It's you can see that with, you know, the Irish Times getting behind the marriage referendum, the gay marriage referendum, abortion referendum, but then also at the same time, not a big song and dance made out of the bank bailout.
No, good point. Yeah.
So,
which is fucking bizarre. We were discussing before this podcast, which is a startling fact that Irish Exchequer, Irish people, have paid for 40% of the Eurozone crisis. 40%. We are a population of 5 million, the GDP of about 440, 430 billion a year, and we've paid 40% of a crisis, which I can promise you that we didn't cause 40% of the actual debt. So that's something that should be remembered, that, you know, we are one of the most indebted countries in the world, but that is not...
We're the second most indebted country in the
after,
world.
I think, Greece.
Yeah.
And again...
Them Greek boys just... fell on hard times, you know.
But
we will have a contribution by a Greek friend of ours.
Yes, he will be giving his perspective from the Greek perspective, the more radical perspective. But again, there's other things which are, if you can look back on, say there's all those signs of, you might call it a European hinterland. So you have in Portugal 5 years ago, a socialist coalition government coming into power. In Spain recently, a socialist coalition government coming into power. I do think that there is a reaction. People have got to a level where that they are now willing to think about this. I think because they have just gotten so angry. Again, there is a point, someone said that you kind of have to go through this point of kind of grief and anger to just accept that the system is the way it is. I mean, it's not like this is a recent system. People have been talking about this for a long time. But you do, there was this general view, which is less of an issue in Ireland, but mostly in the rest of Europe, that post-war there was a settlement that certain things would not be touched. In our last podcast, we talked about how the French... under Macron, the French government under Macron, on Marche, his party, are trying to basically overturn that in regards to pensions. And again, in other parts of Europe, that's been going on longer. Now, thankfully, the status quo there is holding in the sense that there's a basic floor for human dignity. Britain has not. And I mean, we can do another episode on what Britain's doing to itself right now, but we won't do that now. But I do think that there is a sign... the people, certainly younger people who have lived experience, what's called the precariat, are actually responding well. And that's, I think the one thing you can say is about the campaign was that became very clear that there was something moving, which wasn't just about Sinn Féin. In fact, Sinn Féin is in many ways just a vehicle for this feeling, the sentiment.
Yeah, the proxy by which, you know.
Yeah, and that became pretty clear during the campaign, I thought that things were moving and people were beginning to look for an alternative. Now, as things are now, we should probably say the election results were called last night. The final results that I'm aware of are that Fianna Fáil have 38 seats. Sinn Féin has 37 seats.
Yeah.
Fine Gael have 33 seats. The Greens have 12, I believe, 12 seats. Yeah. The Social Democrats have 6. Labour Party have 5. The People for Profit have 3. There is an independent for change candidate, Joan Collins. That's another 1, socialist candidate. 19 independents and 1 Aintu, otherwise known as the giant wanker that is Pádraig Tobin. That I'm aware of, the makeup of the 33rd Dáil. How that works out is... Fianna Fáil got roughly 22%.
Yeah.
Fine Gael got roughly 21%, just under 21%. Sinn Féin got almost 25%, just under by 24.5. The Green Party was 11%. 11%. Labour was at about 4%. People for Profit were below that, I think almost 3%, 2.8%. And the rest, and the independents got what they got, maybe, I don't know what that is, maybe close to 20, would be like 15%?
Yeah, 16.
And that's, as it is, that was the result which I don't think anyone from the campaign, but certainly before, could ever have expected. What did you think of when the results started coming in? What did you think? Were you surprised? Again, were you surprised, or was this something you thought was coming?
I was really delighted that the results came in the way they did, because I was actually quite pessimistic of the potentiality for change among the Irish electorate. So when the first results started coming in, there were main cities like so you had Pembroke coming in, returning Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and a Sinn Féin, and I thought, all right, yeah, well, let's strap ourselves in for a long night. But as we started getting towards more marginal seats, where you would have a lot of people who would traditionally have been Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael voters, you know, down the country, then you started seeing a marked difference, you know, and a lot of support for Sinn Féin. And I think that's just because they were sick and tired of basically the same people each time, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, telling them, you know, giving them edicts from Dublin and not listening to them. So was I surprised? I was and I wasn't. So it was everything I hoped for. But it was, yeah, it's probably about 20, 25 years too late, you know.
Well, things never come when they are meant to come, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the results, basically, for me, I was actually shocked. I was shocked because I am so cynical at this point, perhaps, that I didn't see that coming. But only because I thought people were fairly, as they are, you know, in America and Britain, you know, would vote against their interests. There's a friend of ours who likes to rail against me for saying people are brainwashed or that people are actively, you know, seeking like a masochistic lifestyle. It's just my point of view, but I think this disproves it. I mean, I think that people looked at the housing crisis, they looked at the homeless crisis, they looked at the type of leader that Leo Varadkar was. Now, for those of you who are not Irish, you might say, "Oh, well, he's, you know, he's progressive or liberal." He's not. He's perfectly fine with. I mean, he wasn't even accepting of gay marriage, it should be said, until he realized he could get votes off of it.
Mm.
He certainly didn't back the campaign of abortion. This is somebody who's a politician, and he paints at least on paper for people who are cynical who view people as sheep. He might have painted a good picture. That's why Fine Gael picked him. They picked him because he was relatively young. He was openly LGBT. His father was an Indian immigrant. So again, there was lots of kind of new things about him, that new car smell. But in reality, somebody who, it's not that he's uniquely bad. It's just, as a Fine Gael politician, it's a low bar. It's rather that he just comes across as we all thought Fine Gael people really were, which was callous, lacking in empathy towards the poor, believing poor people had caused their own problems rather than the capitalism causing those problems or whatever else, personal, you know, mental health problems. They are Tories, and he was very, very Tory. And the difference was between him and, say, Enda Kenny, his predecessor. So Enda Kenny had a certain charm when the cameras were on.
Mm.
Varadkar didn't have that. He had none of the abilities to hide how he really felt, which again, his downfall will prove to be he was more honest, or at least he was less able to lie well as his predecessors. And again, you know, they still got 20% of the vote, Fine Gael in this election. So there's 20% of the population who are into that. And again, good luck to them. But clearly from that result, I can say that majority of the population rejected that image of what Ireland was becoming. Mm. Again, most people don't have this enormous backlog of theory and of all these things. They just look at a situation and say, well, there's a lot of homelessness. No one's doing anything about it. People are dying on the streets. There was a man who was put into the back of a JCB or digger?
It was actually a bin lorry. He was transported from a JCB to a bin lorry. He was
crippled,
pretty badly injured.
He was crippled for life. I think he's disabled now.
Yeah,
for life.
And then when it was brought up in the debate, Leo Varadkar said, "Well, look, housing provision has been made for him, but it was only because he was put in the back of a bin lorry
said that he'd been offered something, he turned it down. He also said it was Fianna Fáil's fault because they were the mayor of Dublin at the time, even though the mayor of Dublin has no control over why people are living on the canals in tents. So, I mean, I think that put a really sour taste in people's mouth. I think the fact that anyone who's come to Dublin, and a lot of people come to Dublin for shopping around Christmas, you know, saw the way it is. It's not a place it's not a pleasant place right now. And I think people were like, okay, that's enough. And 9 years is enough. And as Oisin said earlier, even if they'd done a capable job and they tried to do something, 9 years is enough. And broadly speaking, you know, the results were shocking, but maybe in hindsight, they shouldn't be so shocking.
Hello everyone, it's Vox Delta, and today we'll talk briefly about the last election, Sinn Féin, and what should we expect as anarchists. So, Sinn Féin won the elections, got the highest percentage, but as it seems, a government is not very likely to be formed, unless a weird coalition happens. Sinn Féin's manifesto was not a radical one, but the party certainly approached people's issues and concerns better than any other party. Plus, they got some angry votes from voters that consider Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil as responsible for anything wrong in this country. It's very interesting that the two main issues for the voters were A, healthcare, and B, housing crisis and homelessness. Part of the electorate, certainly way larger than anyone's expectations, even Sinn Féin's, didn't really bother about Brexit and the fear that has been spread around about it. At the end of the day, it has been proved once again that when things get tough, people get concerned more about the basics, i.e. some money in the pocket and a place to spend the night safe, a place that is called home. Basic stuff, but not guaranteed anymore in this state with this miraculous economy. We could talk for hours about Fine Gael and the approach they've decided to take before and after the election against Sinn Féin, but it's not something new. We've seen it already from other right-wing parties in other countries. A ridiculous strategy, if I may, which is targeted though to a very specific audience. Let's see then, from an anarchist perspective, what can we expect from Sinn Féin? Would it be a new Syriza or Podemos? Would it be the main force for the Irish society to get radicalized more? And would they be able to improve people's lives? The short answer to all the questions above is no. But let me explain myself. First of all, Ireland in 2020 is not Greece in 2015. Different countries, different cultures, different history, and of course Syriza and Sinn Féin are very different political parties, even though they are both at the left side of the political spectrum. According to numbers, Irish economy is strong and robust, an excellent example on why statistics is the best way to tell lies, while the Greek economy in 2015 was bad, really bad, and it still is. Ireland has a quite stable political environment. Greece had not. Ireland doesn't have a big threat from neo-Nazis. Greece had sent Golden Dawn in the parliament. This background information shows that Sinn Féin cannot be Syriza, as the conditions are completely different. However, this doesn't mean at all that Sinn Féin will be better or worse than Syriza. What are the similarities then? First, the basics again. A few money in the pocket and a home to live, two main reasons for the voters. Second, both parties were never in government before they won the election. Third, both parties absorbed or were awarded votes from people that rejected the establishment parties. What happened to Greece then? Syriza was convinced that they are alone to blame. They convinced their members that Syriza is the only realistic solution for the country. They followed Thatcher's dogma. There is no alternative. New Democracy, the opposition party, was in shambles, which helped Syriza to work on their narrative. And finally, they followed a very neoliberal route that all neoliberal parties would have been very jealous for. Syriza aligned their politics with the EU and the IMF. They tried to be a good kid for the Troika, while at the same time they ripped off the country. They ripped off the powerless members of the society, like pensioners, like low-wage earners. They also sold properties like airports to the devil for a few quid. On another note, they attracted investments, as they say, which of course were totally risk-free because the state guaranteed for them. It was terrible to see people that were activists for their whole life to act like their worst enemies when they were in government. Personally, I don't expect Sinn Féin to be a new Syriza. There's no need to. Apparently, its voters are not hardcore leftists, so they won't be betrayed by a possible right turn. If Sinn Féin or a coalition led by them help people to improve their lives by making rents more affordable or by reducing significantly the number of homeless people or by modernizing the archaic healthcare system, then it will be remembered for years. Do I expect any of this to happen? I'm afraid not. It seems to me that people expect a lot from Sinn Féin because it's probably an alternative option, but they are not willing to help themselves. They would rather someone else to improve their lives instead of trying to do something themselves. And if you expect to be saved, better be prepared to be let down again and again and again. If Sinn Féin felt that they would lose power, they'd rather keep it instead of staying on people's side. Let's not forget, Sinn Féin is a constitutional party, and people's vote is only a means for them to get in power. None of them really wants to change the society. They only try to manage a capitalist economy, or society if you like, in a more lefty way, with a more lefty plan. And they don't need radicals or activists for that, they only need followers. I can't see how Sinn Féin would radicalize the society. They never did it before, in the recent past at least, and big words is not radicalism. So how would they do it while in power? Anarchists should expect nothing from parliamentary parties. We keep giving our fight every day, at work, on the streets against fascists where no political parties are seen yet, against the state. And we keep trying to build ourselves the society we want. We don't expect any master or god to do that for us. We make collectives without bosses, without hierarchy. And most important, we plant the seeds for future generations. Till next time, take care and mind yourselves.
So in the second half of the podcast, or it's probably maybe more than two parts, in this part, anyway, we're going to be talking about what happens next.
Don't worry, it won't be a Peter Jackson trilogy of The Hobbit. No,
don't bring that back. Oh, I was so disappointed. Oh, now I feel bad. Anyway, the results are what they are. Yes, you heard in the last segment. What do we think is going to happen next? What would we like to happen next? So what do you think, Gushin? What do you think is likely to happen? What do you think you'd want to happen?
What I think is likely to happen is not what I want to happen, which is that I would say Fine Gael are going to meet this week and basically say, listen, this is Micheál Martin's last chance to get Taoiseach. Let's damn it all and go back in with the Greens. Now,
You said Fine Gael or Fine Gael are going to meet?
Fine Gael.
Oh, just Fine Gael, okay.
No. Micheál Martin will go back into the party and say, listen, I can fix this situation. I know it's bad, but it'll come out all right, you know, if the economy keeps growing and everything. And what will happen then is the next time Sinn Féin will get a majority, and I think he will be warned about that. So
can I just ask a question? You said that they're going to go in with the Greens, but that's not enough.
Yeah, so the Greens and Independents, like, you know, the Healy Rays and all that. Social Democrats.
Do you think they'll go in with them? I don't think they will.
Well, like, it's anyone's guess. I mean, Ruth, what's her name? The woman from Dominicans. Ruth, she's Social Democrat.
You work in the Dáil. Your co-workers.
I don't have direct dealings with her. Ruth Shortall.
Yes.
She was in Fianna Fáil.
Is it Catherine Shortall? I don't think it's Ruth Shortall, is it?
There's two women leaders of the Social Democrats. One of them is Catherine Devitt Nocton, I don't know.
It's Catherine Shortall, isn't it?
Catherine Shortall, maybe, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of the Social Democrats.
Yeah. Neither am I, apparently. So I think there will be pushback from like people like Gary Gannon, who are young and who have seen like what 20 years of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael hegemony has led to. But it's just about how persuasive Micheál Martin can be, and what he sacrifices. Like, does he say, okay, well, we will build social housing? In which case, I'd say the Social Democrats will be on board, and it'll possibly be a dormant problem for the next recession or the next housing crisis. Or
so you're saying Fianna Fáil, Greens, Social Democrats with some independents will become the government?
Yes.
That's what
yes.
you think is going
to
happen.
I want to predict anything because obviously with the election results and everything, I would never have predicted that. So I would say that is the most likely scenario. Now, what I would like to see happen is for Sinn Féin to try and lead a cross-left coalition, and but it's very contingent on how receptive a lot of independents are to Sinn Féin, and whether Sinn Féin have got enough distance from the sort of troubles. To sort of say, listen, you can trust us with the Special Criminal Court or whatever.
which is Amnesty International said we should stop doing that. It's ridiculous that anybody yeah. are bringing that up as a fucking issue. It wasn't an issue. It's a perfectly acceptable thing to believe it's to get rid of this.
Listen, it's like Ireland has a long history of sort of saying one thing, speaking out both sides of their mouth, like, you know, with regards to the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, we haven't actually accepted the optional protocol, which is the real meat and veg of the act, and we've just given it in name, and then there was an election, so it probably won't be dealt with by this government. So yeah, like it's perfect, of course, really. I mean. And yeah,
you said you prefer a left coalition. How would that actually work out in terms of numbers?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it would take a large contingent of independents, and that's always a danger as well, because independents are sole traders. Like, you know, they're just in it for what they can get for yeah. their constituency, and you know, it's like, to be honest, There's three possibilities from this election. Like the first one would be a re-election, so another election maybe 2 or 3 months time once they realise they don't have the numbers for any coalition. Then there's the Fianna Fáil sort of being supported by Fine Gael with help from the Greens and Social Democrats. Sorry. Then.
Did you just say he's caught corona from Jeffrey Epstein?
Yes, I have. I was sniffing him down an alley.
He does smell nice.
He does smell very nice. Yes,
as apparently all paedophiles do.
Apparently so. So then the final possibility is that there's a left coalition. But I think to be honest, like when you have a left coalition that is that divided in how left they are, like, you know, so Sinn Féin would have historically been quite left, but sort of recently enough they've taken a sort of more pragmatic approach to the economy and stuff, and they haven't been as critical.
I'd say they are, again, if any Europeans are listening to this, they are standard left of centre for Europeans. In Ireland, for lots of reasons, that's considered to be radical, which it isn't by European standards.
Oh no, I completely agree. But
for example, 24% of our governmental spending goes to social programs. In Europe, that's on average 40%. So they would like it to be 40%, not 24%.
Yeah. But it's more to do with how skilled a negotiator both Mary Lou and Micheál Martin are. Because I think that the future of the next government really depends on how convincing they can make a case for, okay, this is not going to be business as usual, and we need real change. So, I do think that Sinn Féin would have a good mandate for that in tackling the housing crisis and tackling the health crisis. And in tackling the transport crisis, but at the same time, if you're vying for electoral space with, you know, people who are varying shades of left wing, you'll never make everyone happy in that. So I think right now they're probably weighing up, like, okay, can we go in with people before profit? Probably, but you know, is there a risk that, you know, there might be some conflict around, you know, the border and stuff? So yeah, it's really, really fascinating. So it's fascinating to sort of to be there. What I would say is that there's no possibility of Fine Gael getting in.
No. That doesn't seem like
you know, as the third biggest party, like, I mean, I think even if they could cobble together a sort of coalition, I don't think that there would
they're
be...
They're toxic right now. Yeah. People won't touch them. Yeah, so what do we think will happen? I mean, carrying on from what you said, I think the most likely thing to happen for Fine Gael is they go into opposition, Leo Varadkar quietly is removed. He probably goes to Brussels. He's made good friends with various people there. Should be said, Leo Varadkar never led the party into a successful election. He was appointed in 2017. He's now failed spectacularly as the leader here. But he is one of those people, you know, suited professionals who'll head off to Brussels. You know, he led the country during the Brexit negotiations, so they'll paint it that way and he'll disappear off to Brussels. Mm. I'd say if they're smart, given what I've heard, a lot of good perceptions of Simon Coveney comes across as actually having a bit of empathy, which is very useful for a politician because you can pretend you do. it's not to pretend he does. It's just, you know, he can, well, it's not to say he does. It's to say he can pretend. So I think that'll happen for Fine Gael. They go into opposition, which they're probably some degree of happy about. I mean, now that it's over, most parties, again, the old perception is you're in long enough, you disappear off for another decade and go back into power. That's what they probably think will happen, and they're probably happy to do that. Now, Fianna Fáil are in quite a quandary.
Mm.
They're in a big quandary, because if they are to go, they can't go in with Fine Gael. They've already been punished for doing that. Even confidence and supply, they can't do that. I'm doubtful whether they're going to be able to, given the numbers they have, because again, they're on 38 seats, get enough to put a government together, even with the independents, and even if they give Greens and the Sock Dems everything they like, because there's a lot of conflicting things there. If they go in with the Greens are going to want serious change on whether it be carbon tax or whether it be planting fucking trees or bringing back wolves,
culling the herd.
All those things, which are not going to be acceptable to people like Danny Healy Ray and Michael Healy Ray. Those are not going. So what? Jackie Healy Ray.
There's about 50 of them.
There's a lot of them. Like, yeah. That's not going to be acceptable. They won't help. I don't think they can make that work. They can't go in with Sinn Féin, because if they go in with Sinn Féin, it undermines their position as quote the Republican Party. It also, anything that might happen that's good during that time in government will be credited to Sinn Féin.
And anything bad that happens.
So it's too dangerous to go in with them. So you're basically stuck in a three-way Mexican standoff where I can't see, given the arithmetic right now, any of it will work. And therefore, to me, it seems fairly obvious there's going to be another election sometime within the next 2 to 3 months, at which point... there will, of course, be far more Sinn Féin candidates running. And if it's a repeat of what's happened, then you have results that give Sinn Féin enough to form a government with some aid from other independents. Again, assuming that everything works out, roughly speaking, how it's worked out before. I don't know for a fact, but I think that's the more likely of things. Now, there is, of course, the other thing, which is that if you're in Fianna Fáil, and you know that's likely, do you not bite the bullet and say, what's the best alternative in this circumstance? How can I, to quote a wrestling phrase, grab a hold? Mm-hmm. How can I slow Sinn Féin down? There is, again, a good chess player doesn't play the most obvious next move. He'll play the move that his opponent least wants you to play.
Cross-face them,
No. Don't bring it up, given what that guy did. Don't bring up Chris Benoit. No. The thing to do is to go in with Sinn Féin. In the hope that after 5 years that the sheen, the opposition sheen, has been rubbed off. That's the clever thing to do. But I don't think the party is ready to do that. I think they're too nervous.
Yeah.
It's a smart thing to do long term, but I don't think they will. So I think there'll be another election 2 to 3 months time. Mm. And we don't, and I would love at that situation for there to be a possibility for a left coalition. I think there is absolutely evidence, especially with what Portugal has done in regards to decriminalizing drugs, in terms of building housing. It's a great example of what a socialist, and again, we're talking about you know, social democratic, really, rather than socialist, government can do. And again, it's, as anarchists, we're not saying that's the end of the road, but we'd be just a combination of masochists and sadists if we didn't want people to have better lives, if that could be achieved in the short term, you know? So, I mean, I think I would love for that to happen. I mean, I think there's a possibility of it. I think how that works out in regards to Northern Ireland is very interesting. I think one way or the other, if Sinn Féin's in government, that's on the table. They've already said that's their red line. There has to be a referendum on Irish unification within the 5 years. They've said that's the red line. If it's Fianna Fáil, in theory, they can pivot. The thing about Fianna Fáil, for those of you who don't know, is they're the party who can, they're like chameleons sometimes. They can become anything that they want themselves to
be. All things to all men.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And they were born that way. Back in the 1930s, Sean Lamass used to say, the Irish people don't need a Labour Party because we are the Labour Party. They had that ability to morph. So if they can think on their feet, they can pivot towards, well, they're always the Republican Party. What did you think we were when we were talking about these things? So again, that's possible. And again, it would be the smarter thing to do, because then they can claim, oh, well, we were part of the referendum. And if it fails, they can say, well, that was Sinn Féin's fault. And if it succeeds, they can say that was us, our doing. So again, but I don't think they will do that. I think they're too afraid of the possibilities there. But if Sinn Féin gets in... on its own back, Mary Lou becomes Taoiseach, and with a coalition of the other groups, damn right, there'll be a referendum. And how that plays out has a lot to do with how Brexit goes. If Brexit becomes, as I think now is fairly obvious, you know, Singapore on the Thames, you know, with free ports, you know, with the destruction of the NHS, destruction of any, basically what's left of the welfare state, which the aristocracy there never wanted it to exist to begin with. I think you have a situation where it's very clear what the options of a majority of the population in Northern Ireland will be. And it depends how quickly that happens. If it's 5 years from now, I think, to be honest with you, by the end of the year, it'll be pretty clear. I think Boris Johnson has made the concessions he wants to make, which is that there will be border checks in the Irish Sea. That was his concession. Now the deal is done, he wants out. And
he doesn't need the DUP either.
No, he doesn't need any of them. You know. He doesn't need anyone but his own party, and he is his own party. He scoured the party of any moderates people, well, not moderates, but old school conservative people like Kenneth Clark, what's that, Rory Stewart, for people who...
A palate cleanser.
He had no chance. And I think right now you're in the midst of a reactionary English nationalist revolution. And people have to accept that. It is what it is. One day it will be over. And one day the English left, because they'll be English by then, rather than British, will be able to maybe recover something from the ashes. And what needs to happen right now, and even people like David McWilliams have said this is a demographic inevitability.
Don't be plugging his...
I'm saying it because, for me, he's the example of a reasonable conservative. He's conservative, but he's reasonable. You can talk to him about things. He is very unreasonable when it comes to socialists. He calls them communists, which is ridiculous, but anyway. For lots of reasons, it's ridiculous. But, you know, we're... I'm an anarcho-communist. The people he talks about are not. They're just social democrats. But anyway, the point is, I think those things are really interesting. I think they're also fraught with danger. The potential of violence erupting in the loyalist community is very real. The danger of that escalating into some version of the IRA and re-emerging to fight, that's there. Again, it depends on how it all plays out. So it's very interesting times, potentially. On the other hand, it could just be another 5 years, as Oisin has said, in which somehow Fianna Fáil managed to cobble together something. But it's, again, kind of putting off the inevitable. I think Sinn Féin now some of them maybe want to be in opposition for 5 years so they can portray them, so gather more left-wing votes. I don't know. But I think for what I would prefer, for all the potential it has, it'd be great if a left-wing coalition could be put together either now or after another election.
However, it has been, 12 years since the last recession? No, it was more. Less,
2008.
Less. 12 years. 12 yeah. years, yeah. Has been 12 years since the last recession, and I think...
Well, it's not 12 years since it ended. It's just 12 years since it began.
Yeah, no, but...
It only ended in 2014.
Yeah.
So that's 6 years.
Listen, lad, are you going to let me talk or what?
Now we will, yeah.
So, six years since it ended. You've got Trump's election in December. So there'll be a lot of sort of market instability and everything. I think it would be a bad time for any government to go into power now, when there's sort of so much up in the air to be played for with regards to the global economy and everything. I think that if the best thing that could happen is Fianna Fáil decide to bite the bullet and go in with Sinn Féin, then a recession happens, Sinn Féin gets some social welfare changes made, and then campaign on that. I mean, that would probably be in an ideal world. I can't really see that happening, but it's anyone's.
It's all called sellouts. They'd be called sellouts if they go on with Fianna Fáil. Here's the thing: if they say to them, "Look, you can be Taoiseach, but our policies will have to be government policy."
Yeah,
which I would say, I would go, if I was her, I'd say, look, we got a larger share of the vote than you did. You got more, may have one more seat than we do, but we got a larger share. Mm. We're not going to put that into danger, which was clearly a principled vote. We're not going to endanger that by going into government with you, where you get to dictate the brown envelopes and the Fianna Fáil, the traditional Fianna Fáil corruptness. So if you want to have our policies together, then fine, we'll go into government with you. But it's going to be pretty clear that we're the ones who put them forward. So if you want to be Taoiseach so badly that you're willing to basically burn Fianna Fáil's chances in the next election.
Yeah, well, this is Micheál Martin's Faustian argument that, you know, I could be king of the world for a day, and then watch my party slip into anonymity, where, you know, Fine Gael, by being in opposition, might be sort of saying...
Fine Gael will absorb the right-wing vote that used to be in Fianna Fáil, and the part of Fianna Fáil that is left of centre will go, do you know what, Sinn Féin's not that bad, because we've been in government with them for 5 years, and they will, and Fianna Fáil will cease to exist. That's the danger that's there. But again, he wants to be Taoiseach.
He does want to be Taoiseach, but I just think there's too many level heads in that party to sort of rein him in and say, listen, you know, whatever dreams you had of being king for a day, you got to park them for a while, and let's really grapple with, you know, being the second biggest and the biggest party in Ireland being Sinn Féin, you know, because that's new arithmetic for any political analyst of Ireland anyway. So
what do you think? So the worst case scenario would be Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael going together. I think it's very unlikely, but let's just say for a second, because we all know why that Fianna Fáil won't want to do that. But let's say he's so desperate to be Taoiseach, he does the opposite. He goes in with Fine Gael, which again has the potential to cause enormous disaster for them. But let's just say for a second they do that. It's Fianna Fáil, it's Fine Gael, it's independence. Or Labour, to be honest. Which Labour will go in like a shot. What could happen in that, but what are the potential to that as well? For positive potential from that as well.
What would
the bad things be about that? What would they do? I mean, the obvious bad things.
Well, they'd get rid of any semblance of sort of free housing market. You know, they'd keep the status quo going with the rental markets and all that. There might be another situation where an economic downturn happens and we end up footing the bill ad infinitum. But also a positive from that would be if they fuck it up, then the next election, I think there'll be more people who are disenfranchised and saying, listen, we might as well give Sinn Féin a shot, and why not? So, listen, it's anyone's guess as well with the global economy. I mean,
fucking hell, yeah.
Yeah, so it could all be changed, you know, in December.
But the point is that interest rates right now for borrowing are the lowest they're going to be, and lowest have been historically. If you want to borrow, certainly as a state borrowing, rather than private borrowing, which is very, very much household debt and stuff is dangerous. But borrowing to invest in infrastructure fucking pays for itself. Building houses pay for itself. Especially council houses, you're getting the money back through rents. And affordable rent, 600 euro, 500 euro for a decent, flat, two bedroom flat or whatever. That pays for itself. Public transport, 500 million a year it would cost to make all public transport free. That literally pays for itself. The amount of road tax you get, or vehicle tax, I think it's called, or whatever it's called. Tax. There's €1 billion. This was in the David Williams podcast. He said there was €1 billion gained from road tax every year, mostly from cars. Half of that would pay for free public transport. And even if we were to say, well, a lot of that disappears because people are driving less or whatever, you still would pay for it. It's not a lot of money, and it would cause so many. And again, put that what money resources you have into public transport, it solves so many problems, especially if you move to electric.
But that is only an eventuality that may happen if Sinn Féin get into government with a coalition of leftists. Fianna Fáil are not going to want to do that. They're not going to want to rock the boat at all. You know, Fine Gael, forget about it. Mm. And, you know, I mean, Labour, Social Democrats, is it too much like a good thing? Possibly.
Well, we don't know. Obviously, we'll find out in the months to come. But it seems unlikely that by the next time we do a podcast that we'll know. Mm. But merely to say that a lot of these things are actually solvable. It's when people like Fine Gael talk about, oh, you know, it's this, that, and we can't do that. Where is this going to cost from? It fucking has costed. Even Sinn Féin, who have a great housing representative, to be honest with you, Owen O'Brien's a very smart guy, from what I can see. Yeah. It's costed. And even if it's not costed, borrowing money is fine as long as you're putting it into infrastructure and it does really pay for itself. And again, this is like, it's gotten bad when you have anarchists and communists and socialists arguing that Keynesianism, which was designed to fucking save capitalism, when it becomes radical to propose, hey, let's like borrow money to invest in infrastructure because in the long run it pays for itself. That's the level of bullshit that neoliberalism has brought. That, you know, Keynesianism, which was once the dominant status quo from the 1930s post.
Palate cleanser.
It's insane that you have to make these arguments. These are people who are unbelievably entitled to privilege, have no real clue about economics, have maintained the power they did through a combination of saying the Sinn Féin or the RA, which no longer works, by the way. A great new thing, but we didn't discuss it during the, or maybe we did during the discussion, was that the Sinn Féin or the IRA shtick no longer works. That's the other thing. That's a huge thing. They cried wolf too many times. People don't care anymore or don't believe them.
I think there's an element of that, and also an element of, you know, you have a southern leader of Sinn Féin who is from a private school. You know, she went
Trinity.
She went to Trinity as well.
Mother now.
And my mum actually saw her having a coffee in Arnott. So that's really? that tells you about her sensibilities.
I was in a cab earlier today, and the guy said she lives in the council house in Cabra.
Yes, she does. And her election office is actually where I do Vincent DePaul.
Really?
It's in Dublin inner city. But anyway,
she's loved there.
She is sufficiently removed from the IRA power structure to legitimately be able to hold up her hands and say, I don't know where the bodies are. And in fact, weren't you gun running for us in the '70s, Fianna Fáil?
Yeah.
And you know, so like, it's...
But there's an election poster from 1976, which is truly hilarious, which is this older lad running in like Kerry, and underneath it says member of the IRA battalion from 1930s, but it wasn't even the '20s; it was the '30s. And you kind of go, that isn't that when Sinn Féin were when the IRA were in their Nazi period? You kind of go, I wouldn't be throwing that around there, buddy. There is a lot of potential and again, it should be said, only like 62-63% of people turned up to vote, which is actually down from the time before. It was 65 4 years ago. If there's another election, do more people come out? Maybe not. Does that have an effect on how much Sinn Féin get? I don't think so. It might actually help them, because a lot of cynical people might think, maybe this is the time I should vote for once. And again, that comes into all the type of horse trading that goes on. But I still think the most likely thing is another election. How that goes, we don't know. We'll find out. Anything other than that is wishful thinking. I think as anarchists, what we need to kind of focus on here, while, again, everything we've said, I think is important to say, and you have to be realistic and pragmatic in the world you live in. You know, we're not living in an anarchist utopia, so you got to try and be realistic. How you translate that into positivity for a kind of a decentralized social society is you say, okay, you're with us on this idea that we can have a society where we can invest in things and pure market forces shouldn't dictate everything. Well, then let's come a little bit further and say, well, what is it exactly that you want? You want more time for more? Well, again, a lot of people, even if Sinn Féin had its full proposals, would not give them any more time in their free life, in their free time. They might get to work and home quicker, but they're still working like 40 hours a week, 5 days a week. Do we not want to start saying, well, we at the very least, let's move it back down to 4 days or 3 days or work from home or move towards a position where we can start saying, well, democratically, society should be run by the people in it. Again, the idea of taking turns in terms of every citizen.
Bring a time to work day, like.
Well, no, maybe not that. But again, all these are these ideas can be opened up if you have. Again, Corbyn in Britain has done more for the left, even though he ultimately failed in getting elected, than anything else has done in a long time. If Sinn Féin does the same thing, you'd be foolish not to say this opens the conversation to how do we build a society where communities run their own affairs, in which the idea of work is something you do for your own, I don't say self-gratification, but you do because you want to do it. Whatever you choose to do, you do it. Equally, you know, those are things we should probably have a podcast on, is what is anarchism? What is the type of socialism we seek? But again, I think this is positive. From a historical perspective, it's definitely positive.
Oh, completely, yeah.
How things go forward, we'll find out. Yeah, I think that's going to be us for this particular podcast. We'll see you in probably another 2 or 3 weeks. And we will have no clue what we're going to do.
The wheels could have fallen off the carriage.
Yeah, yeah. By then we might have died of the coronavirus in Wuhan, but who knows? hey, there's Jeffrey Epstein.
3 where the Lyle's rums did beat, and those loving English feet, they walked all over us. Oh, and nearly every night, when me dad would come home tight, he'd invite the neighbours out with this fine chorus. Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Oh, and how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Kilashandra. Come let us hear you tell how you slandered great Parnell when you fought him well and truly persecuted. Where are the sneers and jeers that you loudly let us hear when the leaders of 16 were executed? Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Oh, and how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Kilashandra. Come tell us how you slew them all Arabs 2 by 2. Like the Zulus, they had spears and bows and arrows. How bravely you faced one with your 16-pounder gun, and you frightened them all natives to the marrow. Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Oh, and how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Kilashandra. Now the time is coming fast, and I think those days are here when those English Johnny's heels will run before us. Oh, and if there be a need, then our kids will say Godspeed with a verse or two of singing this fine chorus. Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Oh, and how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely lanes of Killeshandra. Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wife how you won medals down in Flanders. Oh, and how the IRA made you run like hell away from the green and lovely.